And now, coming to you from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting throughout the multiverse, the Nine Realms, Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, Nidavellir, basically anywhere that has the internet, really, we proudly present Radio Free Asgard.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to Radio Free Asgard. This is episode number 201 of the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. My name is Tom Harris, and we're coming to you from beautiful Chicago, Illinois, as we always do. And as you listen to this, I may well be on my way to Iceland. Yes. And the good news is there's not going to be a break while I'm gone, because I actually am recording a week ahead. And we have a special show coming up while I'm gone, and as well as a regular episode recorded a week in advance. And so there shouldn't be a break unless I really need one when I get back. I guess we'll find out when I get back, won't we? Anyway, so hopefully by the time you listen to this, I'll actually be relaxing in a hot spring somewhere in the wilds of Iceland, watching glaciers and volcanoes and seals and all that kind of fun stuff. Really, really looking forward to this. It's a big trip for me, and probably a pretty pricey one as well, which I'm not looking as forward to, but hey, you know, you only live once, right? Anyway, So we do have an issue to cover here, and keeping in with what we were doing before the big 200th episode, we're going to be covering part 3 of the 8th day. So let's just go ahead and get on with our review.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can, spins a web any size. Catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud, he's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there goes the Spider-Man. In the chill of night, at the scene of a crime, like a streak of light, he arrives just in time. Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Wealth and fame, he's ignored. Action is his reward to him. Life is a great big bang up. Wherever there's a hang up, you'll find a Spider-Man.
Indeed, and this week we are looking at Peter Parker, Spider-Man, number 11. Cover date, November 1999. Cover price, $1.99, as it were. Cover art is by J.R. Jr. Looks like he's inked by Klaus Janson, though it's not really credited. Shows Spider-Man, of course, front and center because it's his book, after all. In the background, Iron Man is fighting against Inferno, who you may remember from last time, and Thor, who's fighting against the watery woman whose name I don't remember. And Spider-Man himself is facing off against a woman who is, she's dressed in some kind of armor, and she's got these weird sort of pigtails coming off of her headpiece. It's kind of a helmet, I guess. It's got a little point on top like Thor's helmet does, and he's got these streamers, I guess you could say, little streamer ear things, and she's carrying what seems to be an electric cattle prod, and seems to be trying to wrap up Spider-Man with it in some weird way. So yeah, so kind of a weird little opening sequence here. We start out in the jungles of Thailand, and we have a guy who looks like a teenager, and he is a graffiti artist. And how does he express that? Well, he's writing all over ancient ruins, which earns him a giant bitch slap from the likes of me. Anyway, there's some narration here. How does one leave one's mark upon the world? Especially when one is born into a poor family of farmers in the jungles of Thailand. One can be a farmer and be swallowed up by the inhospitable jungles that have overgrown the thousands of ancient temples dotting your country. One can move away and be swallowed up by an equally inhospitable world. Or one can just leave one's mark in paint, Scrawling anti-government slogans across the jungle, the temples and all things which attempt to swallow your soul. This is Altama Tom Somchart's plan. He is young, an artist, and frustrated by a life over which he has no control. The police call his art graffiti, a crime which is dealt with quite severely here. And you can see he's tagged all over the jungle, the trees, the ruins, and the police are chasing him, and they're actually shooting bullets at him, and he's running away, and you can tell he's a graffiti artist because he's covered in paint, and he seems to be getting away.
I've got it made. They don't know the landscape like I do.
And bullets are ricocheting off the trees, and pating, pating. And he sees what looks just like another temple here, and he's like,
what's this? Maybe a slight change of direction would be in order. This temple, I don't ever remember seeing it before. It's not related to any of the gods I'm familiar with. Hope this is the god of reckless boys wielding spray paint, because I am in big trouble.
And he's hiding in the shadows, but the police are there, and they're about to find him. He's definitely done for here. But then a light appears, a red light glowing from behind him. He turns around and says,
what? That light? It's so bright, calling to me in my head. Yes, I can hear you, he says out loud. I'm here.
And there's a little pedestal here and a red jewel, much like the red jewel of Cytorak, if you remember. And it's kind of floating there in midair. And he reaches out and grabs the jewel and he shouts,
we are one!
And just what does this have to do with the amazingly spectacular wall crawler? Continue on, true believers, it will. And we then have a splash page, Spider-Man swinging through the sky, Mary Jane under his arm, and she is angry. Speaking of Spider-Man, at that moment the wondrous web-slinger sails with ease across the Manhattan skyline, his ever-lovely wife and renowned supermodel Mary Jane Watson Parker clinging to his side. The love existing between the two young people is evident in their every movement and their every word. And it looks like Mary Jane is struggling. She's like, put me down right now or I'll kill you! Or maybe not. Stan Lee presents an exemplary day. Howard Mackey, John Romita Jr., Scott Hanna did the story and the art. Richard Starkings and Comicraft's Liz Agrapiotza something did the lettering. Gregory Wright did the colors. Ralph Macchio was the editor. And Bob Harras was the editor-in-chief. And Kurt Busiek and Roger Stern are cited here as being the heart, soul, and inspiration. And they're swinging to a rooftop, and she's still shouting at him,
I said, put me down now! I am, but MJ, look, it's me, Peter. I know it's you. I'm not stupid. I knew from the beginning you'd find some reason to get back into the costume, but I can't believe that you would lie to me after all we've been through. I'm sorry. It's just that... No, Peter, please don't. I know the reasons, and I can almost understand why you have to be Spider-Man. But you lied to me. You said you'd quit being in the webs for good. I can't forgive you, not so quickly. Not now. Not with all that's going on.
Okay, I can wait, says Peter Parker. Now, do you want to tell me what's going on with this stalker of yours? Why didn't you tell me about the phone calls? And this is obviously going back to last issue or something like that.
The joke is, says Mary Jane, I thought I was protecting you. I assumed all the phone calls we were getting at home were from one of the many supervillains who knew you were Spider-Man and wanted revenge. I didn't want to give you an excuse to get back into the costume. What a joke, huh? Secrets and lies. Is that all we really have? I was just saying to Jill. Jill! We left her at the scene of the explosions the stalker caused. We...
We'll be fine, says Spider-Man. Well, you know, he puts his mask back on. Now he's Spider-Man again.
The stalker wants you. Take me to her house in Queens. That's where she'll head.
Good. I want you somewhere safe. Her father, Arthur, can watch over you.
Thanks, but I'll take care of myself, says MJ.
And we then shift scenes. It says a short time later at somebody's house.
Mary Jane, Peter, I was so scared. I thought that Spider-Man, I'm just so glad he was there to help. I wish I could get a hold of him myself. I came home after the attack and found my father gone, his gun cabinet empty. Paul has gone off looking for him, but the way he's been ranting about Senator Ward, I'm scared.
And MJ looks at Peter and says, Peter?
Yeah,
I'll see if anybody at the Bugle knows how to get a hold of Spider-Man. And then we see, meantime, it looks like the house is being shadowed outside. And we cut to later, and Spider-Man is clinging to the top of it's a subway car, or, you know, I guess elevated train car, thinking to himself, what am I doing? My wife is being stalked by some madman, and I'm off looking for her best friend's father? Sure, Arthur has helped me out at plenty of jams, and the Senator Ward character seems to be something dangerous. But she's my wife. If I can't help her, what good am I? And as he's saying this, he's kind of jumping and swinging around. Am I doomed to fail the ones I love always, like I did Uncle Ben, like I did Gwen? I'm not going to let anything happen to MJ. It's just not going to happen. And we then shift to the Daily Bugle, where we have havoc going on here. Lots of people screaming, yelling, and kind of doing their newspaper thing. The Daily Bugle City Room. At its best, a place of controlled chaos. Today is not the best day. And somebody's going around, computers are down. Can't get an outside line. There go the lights again. And who should come in but J. Jonah Jameson. And he's with Robbie Robertson here.
Robbie, what in blue blazes is going on here? We can't run a paper without any power.
I know, Jonah. I'm looking into it.
Parker's there thinking to himself, wonderful. I was going to try to have Ben or Betty or someone try to help me figure out how to find Arthur, or maybe get a lead on MJ's stalker, but they're all way too distracted. Why is it that every schlub with a cape in the comic books is a detective, but me?
I was able to get a call off to building maintenance before the phones went down, says Robbie, but I haven't heard anything back since.
And all of a sudden there's a rumble, and Peter Parker's thinking to himself, that didn't feel like a power outage. And my spider sense is in overdrive. And he ducks out and changes to Spider-Man in the stairwell. And he's hopping around in the stairwell looking for what's going on here.
I better check this out, he's thinking. And this is why MJ and I can't have a normal relationship. Between her flying on photo shoots all over the world and me saving the world at the drop of every hat, it's a wonder either of us even made it to our wedding ceremony. Man, I'm sounding way too cranky for a guy my age. Things will work out between MJ and me. They always do.
And he lands in kind of a dark hallway, and he shouts out, hello, anyone down here? Any superpowered vampire demons or anything?
My spider sense is going wild, he thinks. It's actually hurting my head and making me a little nauseous. Or is that guilt for treating MJ badly?
And he rips a door off the hinges, and he's kind of busting through all these different doors here.
Maybe she's right, he thinks. Maybe I handled it all badly, but I did have the best intentions. I was trying to protect her, and look where it's gotten me. In the basement of the Bugle, ripping doors off their hinges and searching for bad guys. A day in my life. The more things change, the more they remain the...
And he bashes down one last door, and he's in this huge room, like a sub-basement, and it is full of freaking Kirby machines, just like this enormous, enormous space underneath the building.
Same? Now, I know the Bugle underwent some recent renovations, but I don't recall seeing the secret underground lair of high-tech machinery on the plans. I don't know what this is, but I'm pretty sure I don't need it right now, he's thinking. And that must be the creator of this thing now. Time to engage him in some clever superhero banter.
And it's a guy dressed in this weird armor. Like all these guys have weird armor. And he's sitting in a chair that's kind of like in the central part of the room. And there's pink lightning kind of crackling out. I wouldn't call it Kirby crackle. It's more like lightning. And the Spider-Man shouts out, hey, you! What do you think you're doing here? This is private property, you know. And he's thinking, okay, he seems to be ignoring my clever superhero banter, so I'll try something else to get his attention. And he shoots webbing at the guy, but it turns back at him, which is something you don't see every day. And he hears a voice shout out,
no, the stone cutter is not to be disturbed in this construction of the God Machine.
And the webbing shoots back on Spider-Man, and he's like, oh, yuck, this stuff is disgusting. No wonder the bad guys hate it. Now, did you say God Machine? And we then have some other characters arrive. We have the watery, cloudy woman show up. And we also have Carnivore, the guy from the Iron Man issue that we covered a couple episodes ago.
Yes, the great mystic engine of the Exemplar, says shadowy, kind of watery woman. Once it is completed, the will of humanity shall be overwhelmed. Then the octessence shall begin.
Oh, I see, says Spider-Man.
You explain too much, Tempest. The humans need know nothing but subjugation and death. So says Carnivore.
And you know, remember Count Zorba is slashing at Spider-Man with his claws. And it doesn't seem to hurt Spider-Man, but it looks like it slashed the webbing that was encasing him open.
You're in way over your head, Spider-Man.
And Spidey looks up, and it's the Juggernaut, and now the rest of this wacky crew is here. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of the Octessence people. And I guess if you count Stonecutter, that'd be 8.
Juggernaut?
You've already met my fellow exemplars. Stonecutter, Tempest, and Carnivore. The others are Bedlam, Decay, and Inferno. Enough with the intros. He's all yours, Decay.
And so Decay, the mummified-looking fishier guy, goes after Spider-Man, and he kind of grabs at the webs, which dissolves him. And you can see, like, this kind of evil green smoke coming up from where he touches the webs. And Spider-Man leaps out of the way because, you know, he's super agile, you know.
I see. Decay, well, thanks for the god lesson. I'll be leaving now. Good luck subjugating the will of all humanity.
And he goes bouncing off, and they're like, stop him!
He must not be allowed to let any others know of the location of the God Machine!
And Spider-Man's swinging around on the Kirby pipes and dodging energy bolts, Inferno, and I guess it's Bedlam. They're kind of shooting these energy bolts at him.
Let any others know.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Gotta call in the cavalry. Guess it's time to break out the old Avengers ID card. And we then shift to Avengers Mansion. And it says a short time later. And Spider-Man is at the door. He's like, hello? Anyone home? I could use some help here. And Jarvis answers the door. And he's like, oh my.
Yeah, Jarvis.
So what happened? Did someone change the secret password or something? And he's all covered in the defense machines for the mansion with like foam and tentacles, all the stuff which Spider-Man seems to have easily dispatched. Cuts to a few minutes later, and Spider-Man's like, yeah, I know, I sent the communicard back with my letter of resignation, but I thought I could still get into the place even if I'm no longer an Avenger.
Sorry, sir, policy, don't you know, says Jarvis.
I guess so.
So, Jarvis, who of the Avengers is around the mansion today?
That would be Masters Iron Man and Thor, sir.
Great, the big guns, says Spider-Man.
And we next see Spider-Man's talking to Iron Man and Thor.
So this God Machine thing is supposed to overwhelm the will of humanity. Or at least that's what they say.
Thor and I have both had run-ins with these exemplars, Spider-Man.
Yea, I long for a chance at the retribution against these false gods. We will confront them anon.
Mind if I tag along, says Spider-Man.
Stay here,
they both say together. Oh, sure. Leave the little guy behind. Give a guy a complex, won't you? And we see another member of our little cast here. We have Dr. Vernon. You remember the Java Man guy?
Actually, it's probably wise that you stay behind, Spider-Man. These exemplars are a bit out of the league of your normal opponent, eh?
Who the? Why does everyone keep saying that? Says Spider-Man.
Sorry. Dr. J. Vernon, archaeologist. I've had the opportunity to study these exemplars up and close and decipher some of their plans, eh? These are truly creatures of mythic proportion. Unfortunately, I don't believe that even Iron Man and Thor fully appreciate the gravity of the situation. While the exemplars are dangerous, it's the God Machine which must be destroyed at all costs, eh?
And Spider-Man's like, hey, where are you going?
I'm going along with them, eh? They may need my help.
Sheesh, he thinks to himself. No one trusts me to carry my weight around here. I'm not sure that even Iron Man or Thor are going to be able to handle these exemplars. I mean, the Juggernaut alone could have given even one of them a run for their money.
Wait a minute. Juggernaut?
Huh, that gives me an idea. Time to call in a wild card. All right, so then we shift scenes, and we're back in the Daily Bugle, and then place is crawling with cops, and they're trying to evacuate, I guess, everybody. And they're trying to get J. Jonah Jameson out of there, and he's like, "Put me down! I am not leaving here without the early edition finished! I don't care what is going on! Put me down!" And Spider-Man comes in through the window, and he's like, "Hey, Jonah, don't you worry. I've got a surefire plan to save your paper, the building, and maybe even the world. I just need to borrow a phone."
"What? Did you hear him? Officers, arrest that man! He's illegally using Bugle property!"
"Chill out, Jonah. Here's a quarter for the call," and flips Jonah a quarter. Now, does anybody remember the area code for Westchester?
"Westchester!"
So I guess that's a long-distance call from New York. And a short time later, we see Spider-Man crawling through, looks like the basement area, I'm not really sure. And he's being followed by the astral form of Professor X. It's floating along behind him like a weird version of Casper. And the Spider-Man's talking to him. "So I started thinking, Juggernaut, mutants, X-Men, Professor Charles Xavier, leader of the X-Men and the Juggernaut's brother, stepbrother. Kane Marco and I were never the closest of siblings. Whatever, but thanks for dropping the phone and zipping over here, albeit in astral form, on my word."
"Oh no, it's far worse than you led me to believe, Spider-Man."
"You know it's not too late for you to call in a few of the X-Men if you wanted to."
"No. As I told you, the X-Men are no more."
And there's a reference to whatever current issues of X-Men are out at the time. And we have the Exemplars there, and they are fighting Thor and Iron Man, and Java Man is there too, and getting in the way.
"Thor," says Iron Man, "Inferno's heat blasts are overloading every system in my armor. If you've got a godly trick up your sleeve, now would be a good time to reveal it."
And Thor's whirling his hammer around, blocking what rays he can.
"My apologies, Iron Man, but it's taking every fiber of my being merely to keep Dr. Vernon safe from Tempest powers."
"Forget about me, eh? The God Machine, it's almost completed. You must stop the Stonecutter from placing the last component within its structure, or humanity is doomed to be carved up amongst the 8 Exemplars." And Stonecutter has the last little gizmo in his hand, and there's like lightning Kirby crackle coming off of it, and he's getting ready to place it in his machine. And Professor X says,
"I will do my best to distract Juggernaut. My mere presence here should be enough to accomplish that. You will have to get to the machine and destroy the component."
"Oh, and that should be easy," says Spider-Man. And he shoots his webbing out and covers over Inferno's eyes with a thwap. And Spider-Man's like, "Here goes nothing. First, let's see if I can buy Iron Man and Thor a break." And he webs up Inferno and Tempest, and he's bouncing around all over the place, and Decay's trying to grab him, and Carrion's trying to gouge him, and he's being shot at by this other one, Bedlam, or whatever her name is. He covers two of them with webbing.
"Two down, and a bunch more to irritate. How's it going, Prof?"
And Professor X is trying to use his mental beams to reach the Juggernaut.
"I'm attempting to reach Juggernaut, but he is under some sort of spell. Keep moving if you can."
And Iron Man and Thor are back in the action again.
"Spider-Man bought me enough time to reroute some of my armor's backup systems. What do you say we reciprocate the favor and clear the man a path, Thor?"
"'Twill be done, Iron Man. Have at thee, false ones!"
And Iron Man shooting his repulsor rays, and Thor shooting the anti-energy out of his hammer, and blowing a pathway through all the machines. And blowing up the machines is actually a pretty good idea. So they're actually blowing bits of the machines off, and the Exemplars are scattering in front of it.
"Whoa, how did they do that?" says Spider-Man. "They were almost completely out of it a minute ago. Now look at them. Somehow they're able to dig down deep and find a final reserve of strength to do the deed. Guess that's why they're called Earth's Mightiest Heroes," thinks Spider-Man as he's bouncing off through the machinery. "And this little spider is not going to let them down. A dab of webbing across the tunnel should at least slow down any of the Exemplars who decide to follow me."
And he shoots a big, huge wad of webbing in here in the hallway. And we see Xavier. He's still trying to mind blast his way through the Juggernaut's helmet. And we're getting Spider-Man's thoughts here. "And if Xavier can just get through to Juggernaut, he could really help us turn the tide against these guys." And Inferno is pulling the webbing off of her face.
"Stop him! The human is getting away! He must not be allowed to delay the completion of the God Machine. The Octessence must continue.
And Bedlam is here with her staff, and they're trying to burn through the webbing that Spider-Man left here.
Not to worry, Inferno. This artificial construct of his is nothing before our might.
And they blast a big old hole through it, and we see them all rushing through it. And we cut to the Stonecutter, and he's got this, like, this power pack or whatever the thing is he needs to put into place. And all of a sudden, it gets grabbed out of his hand by Spider-Man's web with a thwap. And Spider-Man's like, excuse me, I'll take that. And he gets a hold of it, but he's trying to smash it with his, using his spider strength, but he can't. And he's like, can't break it. It's made of something stronger than I have ever encountered. I could use Iron Man or Thor right about now, but I somehow get the feeling that even Iron Man's repulsors or Thor's mighty hammer couldn't scratch this thing. And we see Thor and Iron Man continuing to fight. Now, I don't get is you got four of these exemplars chasing Spider-Man. The Stonecutter is in the chair. So who's still shooting at Thor and Iron Man? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, there's really nobody left. Anyway, so Spider-Man is like, I need to...
You need do nothing more than die, human, says a voice.
And it's Decay. And he's like, oops, Decay. I can... Decay. You're right. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to steal your precious artifact. And I really need to get back to my life. My wife is a supermodel, and she's got this stalker who... I'm sorry. Am I rambling here? Take it. And he throws the little bit of machinery wrapped in webbing to Decay. And he's like,
wait! No, don't! If I touch it, it will...
And he touches it, he grabs it, and it just rots into dust. And there's this giant pink explosion, giant whoosh! And we shift scenes here to back in the fight with Xavier and Juggernaut. And we can see that Bedlam, or whoever this is, has reached through astral space and grabbed Professor X's body out. Is kind of pulling him through a portal here. And he's like,
what? How is this possible? How can you reach through my astral form and pull my physical self to this place?
And one of the other characters, I don't know which one, says,
because, Xavier, we are the gods who shall preside over this earth as it is carved into eight parts.
And they just kind of take Professor X and dump him on the floor. And you see he's drooling out of his mouth and his nose. Does this mean we lost, says Spider-Man? But I stopped the God Machine, and in a pretty clever way, I might add.
You did well, Spider-Man, says Professor X. You saved the city. But now we shall have to see what we can do about saving the world. I telepathically caught a glimpse of Stonecutter's thoughts. With the destruction of the God Machine component, he immediately launched a new plan, one which will teleport us to the North Pole, and use the Earth's own ley lines to make up for the missing component. Heaven only knows what we can do next.
And we have the next issue blurb. To find out the answer, read The Juggernaut, on sale soon. And that is Peter Parker Spider-Man, number 11. And, of course, we will have a few things to say about this, but first, this message.
Hey, listeners, it's Ryan Daly here to give you an exciting sneak peek at the Secret Origins podcast, a review show dedicated to the post-crisis Secret Origins comics. Secret Origins told or retold or occasionally reimagined the origins of many of DC's legendary superheroes, including Superman, Batman, The Flash, Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Jonah Hex, Nightwing, Plastic Man, Batgirl, Blackhawk, Black Lightning, Booster Gold, Detective Chimp, the Legion of Superheroes, and 100 others. But I won't be alone in my coverage of these epic stories. I'm bringing the best and brightest and irredeemablest guest stars from the blogosphere and podcast community, such as Chris Franklin from the Supermates podcast.
I think this is a great idea for a podcast, and I wish I thought of it first, but it's in good hands.
Chris and I are going to be reviewing the first issue of Secret Origins, which tells the story of the Golden Age Superman. And now, Chris, I don't know if this has ever come up before on your own show, but would you say you're much of a Superman fan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I am definitely a Superman fan. Superman, the movie, is still my favorite movie of all time. That's my Star Wars. I don't remember a time when I didn't know who Superman was.
Tim Wallace from Cord Industries, a blog devoted to Blue Beetle.
My friends, my close friends, would probably tell you that Aquaman was my favorite hero, and they wouldn't be too far off from the truth, but there was already a pretty decent blog covering Aquaman, so I went for my number two, which was Blue Beetle. And this issue actually has a lot to do with why he's one of my favorites.
Luke Giaconetti from the Hawkman blog being Carter Hall in the Earth Destruction Directive podcast. Thank you for having the enthusiasm to talk about Halo, because this is not a character that I know much about.
I'm one of the oddballs in that I'm an Outsiders fan who doesn't like the Teen Titans. So I figure I'm pretty much required to do my due diligence in defending the members of the Outsiders team, especially one of the originals.
Siskoid from Siskoid's blog of Geekery and the Hero Points podcast.
One of the subjects I keep returning to is Golden Age superheroes. I like exploring the history of comics, and especially DC Comics, which has the biggest load of Golden Age heroes. In Secret Origins is full of these, because Roy Thomas wrote half the series or so, and just like he wrote a lot of Golden Age heroes and brought Golden Age heroes to the to our attention in the 80s, which was when I started reading comics.
And of course, Rob Kelly from the Fire and Water podcast.
The plan was, all this time, once we finished Who's Who, we were going to do the Secret Origin series. That was our next big project. And you have swooped in and stolen it. And I'm just saying, you better not screw this up. I mean, you're on episode 4 and you brought in your biggest guest star yet. But from here, if it's just downhill, I'm going to be really ticked off that you ruined our idea.
I wasn't really listening to any of that. Plus more incredible guests, including Sean Engel, Chad Bokelman, Kyle Benning, Nathaniel Wayne, Paul Scavito, Greg Araujo, Tom Panarese, Doug Zawissa, Aaron Moss, Alan Middleton, Max Romero, Gene Hendricks, Stella, Ange, Diablo Frank, and possibly even more. Join us as we uncover the secret origins of all your favorite DC heroes, except for Wonder Woman, and Aquaman, and Supergirl, and the Huntress, and Red Tornado, and Mira, and Aqualad, and John Stewart, the Green Lantern, and Wildcat, and Metamorpho, and Geoforce, and Mr. Terrific, and Snap. The Secret Origins Podcast.
And we're back, and that was a little bit longer than I expected. Anyway, yeah, go check out the Secret Origins Podcast. It's good stuff. Anyway, so just a few things to say, because honestly, there's not much to this issue. It is an all-action-ish. Not anybody gets a lot of screen time. We get very little, actually, paid attention to Spider-Man's story, supporting characters. It's just kind of a lot of fighting, a lot of people shooting things and yelling and things getting dissolved, and that's pretty much all there is to it. As a story, well, you know, there's not a lot of there as it goes. But, you know, artwork in general, pretty good. Bit angular. I don't know if I like the way J.R. Jr. draws Spider-Man. I'll be honest. I like the way he draws Thor. I like the way he draws Iron Man. But Spider-Man, not so much. He does this weird angular thing with Spider-Man that is not very spidery, in my opinion. So, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I have a lot of things I like about J.R. Jr. and his Spider-Man is not one of those things. I would talk about the way that the writer characterizes all the various characters, except there really isn't a lot of character there either. So in addition to not having much plot, there's not a lot of characterization, because it's all Fighty McFightenstein. So there's really not a lot going on as far as anything to differentiate these characters from one another. Makes it really easy to kind of lose the sense of who's talking. And I guess that's a weakness in the story, but again, this part of the story is not about that. It's just all about blowing things up, and that issue does it really, really well. All right, and with that, it's time to wrap up the show for this week. Once again, folks, thanks very much for listening. If you want to email the show, you can do so. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. You can also join us over on the Facebooks. Just look for us over on the Facebook, and you will find us. And with that, I am back swinging across New York City to my aunt's house in Queens, I guess, where I will collapse in the bedroom and I don't know, invent webbing or something. And we'll see you all next time here on Radio Free Asgard. You have been listening to Radio Free Asgard, a production of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor and all associated characters are mostly copyright Marvel Comics. The stories presented are done so for educational, review, and entertainment purposes only. No ownership is implied. The silly voices, however, well, they're all me. Musical selections from Eden, the Invincible Sword of the Elfsmith, are copyright Mots Vent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll leave us a review on iTunes, tell your friends, or even join our Facebook group. We really love hearing from our listeners, and we appreciate all of your support. Thanks once again very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.